Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Lana. Joining us from Ireland is Michael O'Keefe, and we're going to talk about all things Irish, from Irish people in America to Irish people in Ireland, of course, and the major topics being Ireland is for the Irish and Ireland is full. Hello, Michael. Welcome.
Hello, Lana. Thanks for having me on, girl. Absolute pleasure to be here.
Yeah, this is going to be great. Well, for those of you who, or for people who haven't come across you on X, I always want to say Twitter, but X, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Sure. Well, firstly, it'll always be Twitter.
Always. Yeah, I know.
X just doesn't. Nobody's thinking with this.
It just
visually, it doesn't work. The app, it looks clunky. So I'm from the southeast of Ireland, Waterford, the oldest city in Ireland, 1,100-year-old city with a rich history. You probably know Vikings invaded us and set up Waterford. So beautiful old historic city in the south of Ireland. My professional life, I'm a personal trainer, so that's my 9-to-5.
Nice.
Politically and activism, I suppose, the first thing that got me involved was probably the citizenship referendum in 2004 here in Ireland. So back in the 90s and the noughties, we had a lot of anchor babies. That's probably the best and most honest way to put it. With a lot of Africans coming to Ireland and having children in Ireland for the purpose of being able to remain and enjoy our wonderful benefit system, excuse me, which is one of the most generous in the world, definitely in Europe anyways. So that was the reason that they were coming. But we had a referendum back then, and the question was simple. Do you want to continue a birthright citizenship, or should we put a stop to it? And that was the first time I voted. I was 19. And from then on, I've just been, I won't say obsessed, but I suppose elbow deep or knee deep in politics on an Irish level, a local level, and then somewhat on an international level as well, looking towards America and everything else going around the world. But some might describe me as an activist. I don't like that word personally. I consider myself a cultural influencer. That's
nice.
That's what I like to say.
I like that.
Because I'm not a social media influencer. What I try to do is I try to use my social media to affect change in real life. So I use things like hashtags and try and get those into the mainstream. I try to start conversations in real life from social media, basically. So cultural influencers is probably the best way to look at it. In terms of what I've been involved in, I suppose I was involved with Sinn Féin. Most people would probably know of or heard of Sinn Féin, you know, the party that were most closely aligned with the IRA back in the day. Once I found out Sinn Féin were globalists masquerading as nationalists, I swiftly departed from Sinn Féin camp and found myself politically homeless then for a number of years. And pretty much to this time, I'm still politically homeless. So I got involved in a number of different issues, from the abortion referendum to the marriage referendum, and basically just being in the center of everything that's been going on with Irish politics and Irish far right, shall we say. You know, anything that disagrees with the status quo nowadays is far right.
Yes.
So if you were to look up anything associated with the Irish far right, again, we put that in air quotes, my name would be associated with it. I've had visits from the terrorism division here in Ireland.
Oh my gosh, are you serious? Because of your tweet.
Yes.
I mean, yes, I know this happens, but it's just like, oh my God. You're just putting up footage of things happening. Oh my God.
Yeah, so I got a phone call about 4 years ago. Now, I found it very strange because the phone that I was using at the time, I didn't have it registered anywhere. This number was completely isolated and boxed in. Nobody had this number. But the Garda Terrorism Squad were able to get this number. They called me on it one day and they said, we need to speak to you about your tweets. So they came and I met them. And it was very interesting. Basically, they had this idea in their head that the Irish far right were like a militant organization, you know, somewhat like the Proud Boys in America, where there was rank and file and a leadership structure and funding and plans and all this. And I was talking to these terrorism guys and I was laughing at them. I was like, lads, this is just a load of fellas with smartphones and Twitter accounts, and there's no militant organization whatsoever associated with this in Ireland. You know, there is no far right, so to speak, because every policy or you know, viewpoint that I hold would be considered the status quo in Ireland 20 years ago. Everything was perfectly normal. Going back to the citizenship referendum that I said started all of this, 80% of people in Ireland, Lana, voted to turn down, to reject birthright citizenship. So it was completely normal in Ireland in 2004 to be against immigrants coming here and having babies. So the country has changed. I haven't changed a bit, but they call me far right now because my opinions haven't evolved or progressed with the rest of the world. So that's just a short roundabout roundup of what I'm doing, who I am. And look, there's probably a lot more, but I don't really like blow my own horn, to be honest.
Oh, I get it. I get it. So what? So how did it? I'm curious. How did it end with these terrorist unit or whatever? You're like, relax, lads. And then what do they say to that?
I'll be honest, I don't think it has ended. I have a sneaking suspicion. I operate under the assumption that everything that I say on a phone or any digital device is being recorded.
Yeah, you bet.
I've operated like that for a number of years. I'm not doing anything illegal. Everything I'm doing is perfectly legal. Like I said, I consider myself a cultural influencer. So I'm not like the IRA from 20 years ago. I'm not trying to overthrow the government by force. What I'm trying to do is wake up enough people in this country that the culture will force political change. Breitbart always said it, politics is downstream from culture. Yes. And if I've seen it 1,000 times in Ireland with a number of different campaigns that I've done. Ireland is Full is probably the most successful one, where I started with a hashtag, Ireland is Full, because we weren't allowed to discuss immigration in Ireland. There was no open discussion of immigration for the last decade or so. You know, it was completely off the table. Any talk of immigration was taboo. So we had to figure out a way around that. So I came up with Ireland is Full. So the idea was, this will start the conversation. People will say, well, what do you mean it's full? And then I can go on and say, well, look, there's 800,000 Irish people on hospital waiting lists at the moment. There's 14,000 Irish homeless. There's 500,000 Irish still living in their childhood bedrooms. You know, generation that will be locked out of the rental market and the buyer's market, but they'll never own a home. So we came up with Ireland is Full. And that got massive attention. It went all over the world. But the way it was, you know, it's I have to kind of operate in that idea that everything I say or do is being looked at by the Gardaí, because they kind of made it very clear back then that, you know, they said we're looking to make an example of someone, so be careful. Basically, we wanted to meet you just to verify that you're not a head case. Now, a head case in Ireland is, you know, a crazy person, or someone who had the potential to attempt to harm a politician or someone in power. That's what they said they wanted to meet me for. And 5 minutes into the meeting, they said, look, you're obviously not what we've been told that you are, but we still want to advise you, you know, keep a lid on it, just keep things tame, because someone will be made an example of. And since then, I've pretty much, as I said, just operated under the assumption that everything I'm doing and saying is being recorded. And yeah. I try to use language to start conversations, like things like that. Ireland belongs to the Irish, a very straightforward statement. Ireland is Full, another
keep
one.
Keep it simple to the point.
Keep it simple.
And
very straightforward.
The cultural aspect is very important. Now, I've noticed, you know, Ireland makes people think of leprechauns and fairies, right? And cozy music and Celtic mythology and art. Yeah. It's an aesthetic that the world just loves and responds to. I've always loved Ireland. Mm-hmm. My best friend is Irish. I spent St. Patrick's Day in Dublin, and I was surprised of how festive and fun that it was, and everyone was so nice. This was many years ago. I thought it was just like an American thing. And yes, I know some pagans aren't happy about St. Patrick, but whatever. But over the last few years, I've seen this huge push in Ireland to make St. Patrick's Day this multicultural, inclusive, gay pride event with accusations of fascism for it to be exclusively, you know, an Irish celebration honoring your culture and heritage and, you know, all that other crap that they say, right? But I wanted to play. Here's some footage, speaking of culture and how important it is, of an Irishman. Henrik, I think, played him a little earlier there, performing an Irish cultural dance. Let's check this out. It's just, you know, it's never cultural appropriation when they do it, right? But then you have like a white girl who's shaking her butt and she gets accused of being racist and stealing black culture. So what do you think about this?
You know, I get a... This hurts my soul when I see things like this, you know, because like this is coming from a TG Cahar, which is the Irish language channel in Ireland. So their remit, their purpose is to promote Irishness. It's not to promote some random African jumping around on the stage like a fucking eight. Like this is what I mean by it. Things are so bad in Ireland that even our own native channels, who are supposed to focus on native programming and promoting the Irish language, this is what they're putting up. You know,
it's like a slap in the face. You know, it's like no other culture does this, or they bring in some foreigner and you perform our dance and then we'll promote you because anyone can be Irish. No, you can't. You're Irish by blood, not by, you know, doing a river dance or whatever. Sorry, don't want to be offensive there. And getting a piece of paper. No, it's outrageous, you know. And then you have that in America too. You have 5 million, I think, right in Ireland, and about 5 million also came to America. Many were forced. I want to get into that later, the slavery aspect. But even in America, they're pushing St. Patrick's Day as this melting pot celebration now. You know, I get Europeans who want to go honor another European culture, right? Like, cheers to my Irish friends or whatever. But that's just it. It's part of European culture. But, you know, that's just what's happening, right? Pretty much to all of our cultural traditions. Now it has to be all inclusive for everyone because it's racist and fascist to keep it for ourselves.
Yeah, well, look, Ireland's one of the only countries in Europe that I'm aware of where it's acceptable to say anyone can become Irish. You know, this is a problem that we faced for a number of years over here, this paper Irish thing where people get citizenship and all of a sudden they're Irish. And this clip here will demonstrate it perfectly. This is Hector on the left interviewing a man called Black Paddy. This fellow calls himself Black Paddy. And his whole thing is, you know, the Africans are taking over and Ireland is changing. And Hector is sitting beside him there. Like, Hector was, his whole persona, his career, his success was all came from highlighting Irishness and farming and rural Ireland. And now all of a sudden, Hector has turned into this progressive, open borders, anyone can be Irish lunatic. And as he said, it's like a slap in the face. Because, you know, we grew up watching Hector on television speaking Irish, and now Hector is sitting beside an African called Black Paddy. And I don't know if you can play that clip.
We'll play the clip right now. Yeah, and just the hostility he has, right? Ireland welcomes him in, and this is what he has to say. We'll play it.
It's a new Ireland.
It is, though. It is a new Ireland. It's a new Ireland of new, different diversities, multicultural people, Filipinos, Spanish, Africans, mixed people. I met a girl the other day, and I was like, where are you from? She goes, my man's from China, and my dad is from Africa. I'm like, whoa! Ireland is unique now. We're mixed. Because I can imagine in 10 years' time, there's going to be Barack Obama's walking around, Beyonce's, and different sorts.
Mixture of people. Me. So now Ireland's great.
The whites are going extinct here now, so we're taking over.
Like,
we're taking over. They're going extinct. Laughing.
We were unique beforehand. We were one of the most unique countries on earth, and that's why everyone loved us. Because, as you referred to, when you came to Ireland, you felt, you know, that warmth, and we're in terms of, especially white people, I think we're one of the most unique white people on planet Earth. The way we use language, the way we express ourselves through art and things like that, we're not as buttoned up as the British. We're not as I don't want to say fake as the Americans, but, you know, over the top polite and doesn't happen in Ireland. It doesn't happen in Ireland. None of that happens in Ireland. We're very straightforward, say what's on your mind, wear your hat on your sleeve type of people. And to be dealing with this now is very difficult because of the fact that we've been told to just shut up and accept it when we all know that it's wrong. Everybody knows what's happening in this country is wrong at the moment, you know.
Absolutely. The other thing I noticed when I was there, and we should get into this, the changing demographics. I've been to Ireland 3 times. The first time was in the 1990s. And then I visited again, you know, more recently, and was surprised to find how many foreigners were there. Just lots and lots of foreigners. And yeah, there's not a lot of room, right? But they just keep packing them in. But let's go far back where all this began. Like, walk us through the major decades of change. Because you said, what was it back in 2004 that 80% of people didn't want immigration, right?
Yeah. So we had the citizenship referendum in 2004 where 79.6% voted against it. I think it was 79.6% voted against this. So it's overwhelming, 4 out of 5 people. So Ireland was a fairly homogenous culture after the Rising in 1916 and then the formation of the Free State in 1921. Ireland was a very homogenous culture. There wasn't very many foreigners here at all. There really wasn't. Like, you can go back and look at the Irish census records from 1920 and back as far as those years. There's a handful of foreigners on the island. You know what I mean? It's a majority Irish country, obviously with the Brits up north. But the main decades of change would have been the '90s and the '90s. So in the '90s is when we saw a lot of the African immigration, the Africans coming over and having their anchor babies. We also saw a lot of immigration from Eastern Europe, mainly Poles and Slovaks. Now, they were completely different. And because obviously we share a lot culturally with the Eastern Europeans, the Polish, especially the Catholic traditions and, you know, the matriarchal society where we respect for our mothers and, you know, we cherish our grandmothers and all that, very similar to the Poles. So they assimilated, they worked, they fitted in, they had children, and a lot of them became, you know, they didn't become Irish, but they became welcome in the country. Do you know, I have a lot of Polish friends to this day who I'd say still contribute to Ireland, and I'd be sad to see them leave. But the Africans were a different story altogether. And you can see, you know, from some of the clips you're playing there, the Africans come to Ireland and they don't assimilate. They don't take up work. They have a huge unemployment rate. Crime is through the roof. They're way overrepresented in our prison population, just like in America, which are 13% commits 52% of the murders. We have crazy numbers like that as well, you know. So the Polish immigration was kind of, I think that gave Irish people a false sense of security about immigration. So we took in so many Poles, regular Irish people thought, we can take in people, this is grand. You know, look, the Polish settled. Then we started getting the Africans and the Muslims and that really started to change things. We had I won't call him a distinguished, but we had a Muslim cleric by the name of Dr. Ali Salim speak in 2004 and say that when and if Muslims become the majority in Ireland, Sharia law should be implemented. And this was another one of those moments where, you know, alarm bells start going off in your head. You're like, hold on a minute, yeah. I see where this is going. And you're looking to the UK and you're seeing how they're being destroyed demographically. Oh, yeah. And you're looking to America, seeing it over there as well. So it really did come in a very short space of time, to be honest. Most of the immigration that we're dealing with now happened from 2004 onwards, most of it. So the problems we're dealing with the, you know, the Africans, the Middle Easterners, the Brazilians. There's an awful lot of Brazilians here as well at the moment, and South Americans.
People most from India, people too, came. I saw. A lot of people
huge
from
numbers
India.
From India.
It's like, come on, your country's fine. You have an ethno state. Why do you need to come to Ireland? Because they can.
They've got a space program and nuclear weapons. And we give money. We give charity to money. Irish people donate to India. This is one of a thousand things.
You're 5 million.
Ireland.
You're 5 million. They're like 1 billion now. What?
Yeah.
Jesus.
I think they're 1.3, aren't they? 1.3.
Yeah.
We had the citizenship referendum in 2004. In 2002, the census, 2002 census showed that Ireland was 91.6% Irish. Irish, well, they call it white Irish, but, you know, that's a given, in my opinion. There's no such thing as black Irish.
Yes.
2022, 20 years later, Lana, that has dropped down to 80% of the country is Irish. So one-fifth. Jeez. Over 1 million people in this country at the moment is not Irish. So you can see how fast that has happened. That's startling. I don't know if there's any other country, maybe Germany or Sweden, that has seen that demographic change happen so fast.
That is rapid.
And if you combine that with, it's insanely rapid. If you combine that with the emigration that's happening as well, Lana, where we're losing a generation to Canada and Australia, because they, you know, there's no life for them over here. They can't afford to get on the property ladder. Job opportunities are limited. So you combine the massive immigration with the emigration and you have a situation like 2022 where the natural change in the population from Irish people was 22,500 Irish were, you know, after births and deaths. That's what we added, 22,500. With immigration, through natural change, or through immigration, we added 112,500. So that is a 5-to-1 replacement rate in 2002 of Irish people. And to me, that is startling. Those numbers are outrageous.
It's genocidal, yes, yes.
At that pace, we're done in 10 years.
Yeah, you had posted something about the push to make Irish people a minority in their own country. They're aiming for 2040. I keep hearing 2040. I love it. It's like America. Yay, let's celebrate. You know, white people are becoming a minority and you're supposed to be happy that your people are becoming a minority in your own country, right? They want an additional, what is it, 1 million foreigners by 2040. And so that means they need more jobs, more homes. You don't even have these things for your own people, right? And then together with Northern Ireland, that would make the population 8 million by 2040. 20 years ago, the population, like you said, it was 3.5 million, right? And so what is this lie about? Yes, we need to import these people because we need more workers. But then they say we need 600,000 new jobs. Remember when they used to talk about overpopulation and you know, worrying about mass migrations of people because of climate change and the environmental impacts and all that.
Yeah.
What about the environmental impact of a mass migration and overcrowdedness in Ireland? Right. And you guys have been hit with the don't have as many kids and it's still working even on Catholics over there. Right.
It is 100%. So that the Ireland 2040 plan was something that was it kind of went under the radar until Stefan Molyneux got a hold of it. And Stefan made a couple of our video on it. He broke down the whole document. He went through everything from start to finish and he explained what was going to happen. And this got massive traction in Ireland at the time. It was flying on I think it was even in a trending section on YouTube back in the day and before you. This is pre, you know, YouTube full clampdown. But a phone call was made and it was pulled from YouTube. It disappeared off the internet and that limited our ability to get it shared around, you know. But as you alluded to there, 1 million extra foreigners they're saying they want on the island by 2040. If you ask me, they've already accomplished that goal. They've already accomplished that goal. I think there's going to be 10 million on the island by 2040 at this rate, because it's not just asylum seekers, Lana. We're being hit on multiple levels. So we have asylum seekers coming in at a rate of about 250 to 300 a week. Add to that, we've got 650 average Ukrainians coming in a week as well. Then we're taking people from, we're taking non-EU workers from Iraq, from Afghanistan, from Syria. We're bringing
workers.
These in on special programs and giving them jobs and welfare.
Yeah.
Workers, labels. Then we have the middle-class immigration. So people coming in to work in the tech sector, people coming in to work in finance. There's parts of Dublin, the docks in Dublin, where 92% of the residents in there, based on the last census, were non-Irish and had a salary of above 127,000 euros a year. So these are people being brought in by the American big tech companies and the Indian tech companies, Infosys in particular. They're running roughshod over Ireland at the moment. They're a big Indian tech company. But they're bringing these people in. These people are driving up the price of property for the Irish people, and then they're not employing Irish people. They're getting the tax breaks. So it's like it's a multi-pronged assault. We're being attacked on every level.
Yes.
If it was just the illegal immigration or the asylum stuff, we could go, right, let's fix this. But it's coming from everywhere. And then, obviously, anyone can walk into our borders at the moment. Like the last, pretty much since COVID, they brought in about 280,000 foreigners during COVID. And since then, they abandoned border control. They instructed the Gardaí manning the immigration stands to allow people in, even if they don't have valid travel documents. So at the moment, we're looking at about, I think the latest number showed 66% of those who entered Ireland the last 12 months did so without a valid travel document. So with either no passport or a fraudulent passport. So it's just it's a bombardment at the moment. That's where we're getting hit on all levels and from all angles. And it's hard to keep up with. A lot of people don't like him, and whatever your feelings on the man, Alex Jones nailed it when he said information war.
Yes,
because
absolutely.
We're drowning in information over here, Lana. Mm-hmm. There's so much for people to try and focus on. And one issue you know, you might find out about, oh, okay, this is happening. They're leaving people in without passports. And you try and mobilize some kind of pushback. The following day, then you find out about something else going on over here. And you're like, oh, hold on a minute. How do I stop all this? It truly is an information war in Ireland at the moment. We're being drowned in propaganda, being shamed because of our history and just for being white.
Well, that's just it. Yeah, this anti-white programming they have really used as a way to justify mass immigration. Why we should become minorities in our country because all white people are racist, you're evil. You have, colonialism and all this crap. Now, I see that Ireland is, which we'll talk about that in a second, because you can't blame Ireland for that. So what's their excuse here? But Ireland is getting hit with all the same anti-white propaganda. I see it, right? Gender theory, bogus critical race theory, you have equity, you have anti-racism, all the same shit. So when did this start affecting the population in Ireland? Because usually before I was like, oh, is this just a targeted at America? And then, you know, we're like, oh, no, eventually that's going to come to Europe. And I see it coming hardcore in Ireland, too.
It's come at a pace and an intensity that I don't think anyone predicted. We're being bombarded at the moment. So 10 years ago in Ireland, none of this stuff really existed. Even in, when was I in college? I'm going back 20 years ago. I was in third level. So I have 2 degrees. Of a business degree, of a physiology degree, so I spent 7 years in third level. When I was in third level in my college, I remember there being 3 black people. Now, you're talking a college of 14,000 students. I remember there being 3 black people. This was 20 years ago. So in the last 10 years, it's almost, in the last 10 years and definitely the last 5 years, you know, I think it's accelerated a lot since 2016. I think everything really accelerated since 2016 with Trump being in office. It kind of polarized everybody. Mm. But pre-Trump, I don't remember there being, you know, language police or talk of diversity, equity and inclusion or trans people or any of this nonsense that we're facing now, down to the climate change stuff. I don't recall this being here 6 years ago. And I used to mock my American friends being like, you live in clown country, lads. How can you be talking about having more than 2... Yes. There's only 2 genders. What are you talking about with your 72 genders?
No, there's 100.
That'll never come to Ireland. We're 100 now. You can't keep up with them. That'll never come to Ireland. We're grand over here. And now it's all just come at once. So we've been hit with the propaganda, the climate, the abortion, the gender, immigration, everything. In the space of the last 5 years, the Irish people have been bombarded with a level of guilt, shame, and propaganda that I don't think Goebbels would be proud of it. What has been done to this population is, you know, the normal Irish person is like this, you know, outgoing, chatty, very friendly. Yeah. We could stop anyone on the corner and we could have a conversation. If you want to come in for a pint, want to make a cup of tea. We're very, very familiar and friendly people. In the last 5 years, that's just gone. Ireland is a horrible place to be at the moment.
There's and the Catholic Church, what does the Catholic Church do about it? I mean, they're just as liberal now too, so right,
the Catholic
that
Church
hasn't
is,
made look, a difference.
They folded to a lot of the pressure over here, Lana. That's a big problem, is, you know, they folded to politicians and instead of holding on to traditions that have lasted thousands of years, they folded on something that was pushed on them, you know, 16, 17 months ago. And you're kind of like, lads, do you really believe in what you're saying? Like, it's, you know, COVID was the big one with the Catholic Church over here, because a lot of Irish continued to go to church during COVID and a lot of the churches shut down. So when churches started shutting down during COVID and priests started telling people, oh, you're too sick to come in. And we're thinking, hold on a minute now. I remember a story about a leper. I remember learning the story about a leper.
That's right.
But I'm too sick to come into the church now. So a lot of people lost faith in their faith during COVID. And it's resulted in this society that's fractured along a number of lines at the moment, politically, religiously, socioeconomically. Like, there's a certain section of Irish society, you know, the globalists who, the capital city dwellers who fly from London to Dublin to Washington or whatever it is. And these people don't live in the real Ireland, but they're, life is fine for these people. But if the regular Irish people, the middle class, the working class, these people are living in it's a completely different country. It's a dystopian nightmare compared to what we used to have, Lana. I reckon if you came here now, you'd feel uncomfortable based on visit them.
Yes. You know, oh, of course. I mean, it would be controversial to say, yay, Ireland for the Irish. Whoever thought that that would be controversial? Or Sweden for the Swedes, Germany for the Germans. Yeah. This is true diversity, right? Isn't it? Like having the separate ethnicities be alive in their homelands instead of just blending them all out into nothing. Basically, they want America to happen in Europe too, this great melting pot of just crap, you know, and it just turns into a culture of shopping malls. That's all it turns into.
Yes.
McDonald's, MTV, thug culture, like that's it, you know? And then we're not in touch with any of our European roots. Yeah, and then we're easy to manipulate. We're easy to control. And we don't give a shit about folk and tribe and our future and our nations. And then, bam, they got their hooks on us, right?
Yes, absolutely. And they've been really successful doing that over here. Because for a long time, Ireland was very far behind the global pop culture. Like, we were kind of disconnected from it almost, you know what I mean? But with the... you know, high-speed internet and stuff like that, we're all kind of now just plugged into this global machine of corporate capitalism, wokeism. It's like Irish people are developing American accents, you know, because Irish kids growing up with American accents. And, oh, yeah. And this is not like one or two. You stand outside an Irish school to collect your child and you will hear 40 or 50 Irish kids come out speaking with an American accent because they're being raised watching YouTubers. Ah. You know, they're This is what's happening over here at the moment. It's a horrible, like, we're like a suburb of America almost, you know, and not the good parts of America. Not the good parts, the shy parts, let's be honest about it, the horrible culture, the zero respect,
trash,
short attention span, as you said, forgetting about the tribe and folk and all of that, and have no investment in the next generation, complete live for now and let's chase the dopamine rush. It's not the same country that it was a few years ago. You really notice the difference if you came over.
Now, we always get hit with the, you know, excuse of colonialism, right? Oh, we're bad because Europeans colonized America. So therefore, the whole world can colonize you now and treat you like you guys never treated, you know, supposed natives or whatever. But you can't accuse Ireland of colonialism, can you? A lot of non-whites just look at all of Europe. Oh, they're all colonizers. They don't even know. They can't even name three countries in Europe, right? They don't even know how many different types of people are there, all their history, all their culture, all their past. No, they just see white people as just, they're all bad. They're all evil. So do you, you don't ever hear these colonialist lies, or do they try and introduce something there in Ireland in the education?
Yeah, they have a different tactic they use over here. So they can't use colonialism. But what they use is, sure, didn't the Irish go everywhere? That's the line that's used over here. So because a million Irish fled a British genocide in the 1800s, we have to accept unlimited Mohammeds in 2023. That's the line. And that's literally what you'll hear. Like, you'll hear it from teachers. You'll hear it from Gardaí. You'll hear it from politicians. Sure, didn't the Irish go everywhere? And we were treated wicked bad when we went places, so we should look after people now. And it's this, like, that, it's not an argument to me. No. It's an emotional statement you're making there. And we can't decide the future of the country based on, like, my family didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
My family stayed here. I can trace my family back to the 12th century in Ireland. They didn't go anywhere. They stayed. Why am I having to pick up the tab for, as I said, Mohammed and Ahmed and whoever else wants to come in here now? They're not my problem. But yeah, it's they figured out a way around the colonialism, and they play on the, because a lot, you know, we're still a very caring people. We're still, you know, if an Irish person had a sandwich, he'd give half the sandwich to whoever's sitting beside him. That's just the way we are.
Yeah.
We share everything. You know, we're very, very generous people, and it's ingrained in us. So,
and now it's being taken advantage of. And now it's being taken advantage
100%.
Yeah,
that argument works. That argument completely works on Irish people, because you play on that. Oh, you know, what if that was an Irish person coming in? And that's how they've gotten away with so much, Lana. That's how they've rushed so much of these so much immigration, so much demographic change so quickly, is literally by saying things like, didn't the Irish go everywhere?
Well, there was the potato famine Okay, there was that. And then a large section of Irish American population, I don't know if you guys are taught this over in Ireland, but were brought over as slaves, right? We're told that white slaves is just a myth. You know, Snopes said so. White people have never been slaves. They've just been indentured servants. This is lies. You know, first of all, this is part of human history, slavery. Two good books on the subject here. Yeah, White Cargo, Forgotten History of Britain's White Slaves in America. And then, of course, They Were White and They Were Slaves, Untold History of the Enslavement of Whites in Early America by Michael Hoffman, who we had on. Let me just read a few Irish slave facts, okay? The Irish slave trade began when James II sold 30,000 Irish prisoners as slaves to the New World. By the mid-1600s, the Irish were the main slaves sold to the Caribbeans, to the Caribbean islands. 70% of the total population of the Caribbean islands at that time was Irish slaves. Ireland quickly became the biggest source of human livestock for English merchants, and I would put some brackets around some of those merchants as well. The majority of the early slaves to the New World were actually white. From 1641 to 1652, over 500,000 Irish were killed by the English, and another 300,000 were sold as slaves. Ireland's population fell from 1.5 million to 600,000 in one single decade. During the 1650s, over 100,000 Irish children between the ages of 10 and 14 were taken from their parents and sold as slaves in the West Indies, Virginia, and New England. In this decade, 52,000 Irish, mostly women and children, were sold to Barbados and Virginia. Another 30,000 Irish men and women were also transported and sold to the highest bidder. In 1656, Cromwell ordered that 2,000 Irish kids be taken to Jamaica and sold as slaves to English settlers. The African slave trade was just beginning during the same period. It's well recorded that African slaves, not tainted with the stain of the hated Catholic ideology, were more expensive, right, to purchase, were often treated far better than their Irish counterparts. And to put this in perspective, there was only 400,000 African slaves who were brought to America later after, right? So why do we not hear about Irish slaves? Why is it less than African history? So also when they try and say, well, you went everywhere. Well, not everyone wanted to go, did they?
That's true. That's a good point. Well, look, the way that's not taught over here, Lana. You know, I had to go and learn all this stuff myself 25 years ago when I left secondary school and college. The version of history that's taught over here is very selective. And you will never hear from Irish academia. You'll never hear it that we were slaves. That is, it's almost as if they've just decided, look, if we just don't talk about this period of Irish history and let's just try and fold the Irish into the colonialists, let's just apply the colonial guilt onto the Irish and let's just hope they take it. And Irish people are so malleable that they're kind of going along with it. You know, they're kind of, oh, okay, well, you know, we won't talk about the fact that we were taken as slaves, or we won't talk about the fact that the British genocided a million of us. And, like, you know, I know it's called the famine, but to us it's the genocide, yes, the potato genocide or the British genocide, because they were shipping, there was food being shipped out of Ireland during the 1800s when that was happening. There was no shortage of food in the country. It was just being taken from us. So they were trying to starve the Irish people. But yeah, it's this notion of wanting to, you can't have one white nation that is not the oppressor. So you can't have one white nation that sticks out from everyone else and is like, oh, they're the good whites. Well, no. The globalists can't allow that. So they have to use any tactic possible to try and make this Irish people feel as if the guilt should apply to them when it simply does not. Like, I'm not one for, you know, I wouldn't be like my ancestors suffered, so, you know, well, I have a reason to complain. Yeah. I'm not like the African-Americans at all. Generational, whatever, that happened then. I'm my own person now. But if we are to talk about it, we were treated worse than most of these people were. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You spoke about the numbers. There are 400,000 African-Americans sent over by their own people. We had Africans coming and landing ships in Ireland and stealing Irish people. But the thing is, Irish people, because of our stoicism and our humility and we don't like to go out and shout and scream about being victims. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of an inbuilt trait in us that we're like, get on with it. we don't like to highlight the fact that something bad happened to us in that sense. So it's you never hear that topic of discussion over here. Like growing up, that was never discussed at the dinner table. In college, I never heard it. You know, it's just something that's revisionist history. Let's just pretend it didn't happen.
Yep.
You're just as bad as every other white person.
That's just it. Yeah. Did you see, speaking of the subject, Humza Yousaf, he was hating on Scotland and saying that Scotland isn't white. I did a video about it, which included a response by Jordan Peterson, where he said, he's not white, like the Irish weren't white? What did you think when you came across that? Because, of course, it's bullshit. Of course the Irish were seen as white. Jeez.
Yeah, it's this whole thing of no blacks, no dogs, no Irish.
Yeah.
So that was the thing, you know, when the Irish went to America. But, like, was it really? Do you know, I talked to people who know what the situation was over there. And the Irish, although they were treated bad, like, again, we don't like to identify with being victims. So we just get on with it. But this, oh my God. So our current Minister for Children, Rodrigo Gorman, he's a gay man, a childless gay man. He's the second gay Minister for Children that we've had in succession. The previous one was a Jewish... Now, this is how she identifies, you know, these are not my words, a Jewish lesbian Wiccan.
Great.
That was our previous children's minister. Now we have Rodrigo Gorman. So this man tweeted from his personal Twitter account, Humza Yousaf, total ride, which in Irish English translated to American means, oh, he's a very sexy man. I'd like to have sexual relations with him. So our children's minister tweeted this about this guy.
Holy shit. Oh my God.
Look, Henrik's brain has pulled everything up there. Good
well,
stuff.
I guess there there. At least he's choosing to go for an adult.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, we'll say nothing about that. But this is, so we have, you know, you have Yousaf in Scotland. You have, we have Leo Varadkar here, who's
the Indian.
Indian. His mother. Indian. His mother's Irish, but, like, you know, he identifies with the Indian side.
They always
do. He identifies with the Varadkar side, you know, exactly. Yeah, exactly. They always do. So the British Isles, in a sense, have been taken over by India. If you could look at it that way and make an argument for that. The leaders of Britain, Ireland, Scotland.
Yes.
Are
yes.
Indians.
Yes. And there's one trying to run. There's one trying to run in America, too. And they're highly ethnocentric. They favor each other. The first thing they do is, like, how do we get more Indians in this country? How do we get more Indians in positions of power? They're always thinking of their people first.
Yeah.
You know, and then they're shocked that we don't want them there. It's like they're coming to these tiny countries like Ireland. It's a small country, you know, and they want to even be in those, right?
Yeah.
Even rule those. And then they say, oh, it's some of them have just blatantly said, oh, it's revenge for colonialism, like in England, right? They say that.
Well, we have a lot of them here at the moment. Now, my apartment here where I live, like, I have Indians above me and I have Indians on that side of me. Now, I have a one-bedroom apartment here. They're all one-bedroom apartments. There's four Indians living above me in a one-bedroom apartment, the same size as mine. Now, I'm in this on my own. So they just squeeze in.
Yes.
You know, they'll go 4, 5, 6 to a little box room, and their culture is so different to ours. So I don't know if this applies in America or anywhere else, but, like, say around this time, 9 p.m. at night in Ireland, everyone just starts being quiet.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't play music. It's just it's a cultural thing. Like, it's right, respect everyone else now. People are winding down, you know, you wouldn't play music after 9 p.m. You wouldn't be out in the street shouting. It's just it's a neighborhood thing, a country. It's again, one of these things that you have to be Irish to understand. Everyone just starts chilling out a certain time of the evening, and you don't interrupt your neighbors. Certain days of the week are sacred. Sunday, you don't make noise on a Sunday. You know, like, it's not enforced, but I'm talking about, these are the values we have. We respect our neighbors. These people don't. Whatsoever. These people come to our countries and time means nothing to them. They can be up, that family will be up at 3 o'clock in the morning cooking a fucking, they'll have the blender
lentil
going
soup.
And the washing machine will be on. Yeah.
Well, they're not working. They don't give a shit. They don't have to be anywhere early. You know, maybe the welfare office.
Let's not get into the smell of Indian food.
And that is why they belong in India. You have a country that is a billion people, 1.3 billion people that is just you. And you can have all the lentil soup you want and you can be as loud as you want out in the streets. I've been to India. I've been to a lot of third world countries. Yes, I know they're loud. They're out there. It's just, it's a different culture. Okay, this is why we don't like multiculturalism. It creates problems.
Exactly.
Because it takes a long time for a culture to like have its unwritten kind of rules and things that we understand, you know? This is like over generations in the making. You can't just, you know, undo that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And look, they should be allowed to be, you know, boisterous, loud and smelly, but do it over there in your country. And let us be friendly and kind and colloquial and look after each other. You know, let us have our little island. It's tiny.
Yes.
You know, it's less than 400 miles from tip to tip. It's less than 250 miles from east to west. It's tiny, and it's all we have. If this goes, what happens then?
Yeah.
Do you know, what happens then? The Brits have already taken six counties. Like, what's next? There's certain counties in Ireland now where you can see what's coming down the line, Lana. Galway, for example, on the west there. Galway, the number one baby name in Galway in last year was Mohammed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
You can see where things are going.
And the thing is, you have the problems of homelessness, right? You have poverty. You have a very backed up medical system, right? So when does it end? Foreigners are being housed in these historic landmarks, I saw, these nice hotels. And then let's play. There's a massive queue for rental homes, right? And aren't people waiting around for like a couple of years or something to get an apartment or a house or something? What is it like there right now as far as housing?
Well, so for the social housing, we operate a social housing system over here where, you know, people up until basically the middle class can get assistance for getting a house. Now, look, a lot of Americans especially don't like our system because we are basically a socialist country in the sense that we have tax, we have, you know, free healthcare for Irish people, free housing for Irish people. I personally don't have a problem with that. If we want to look after our own, that's fine.
Sure, I'm not going to,
you know, I don't disagree with American conservatives on everything. Some aspects of like the social healthcare, the social housing, that's fine if it's done properly, but it's not being done properly. And that's the big issue at the moment. So we have the housing lists in Ireland where you're supposed to be able to put your name on a list and a house comes up and you're offered a house. This was the social contract that we all understood growing up in Ireland, that if you weren't able to afford a house, you'd apply for a social house. You would never be homeless. You would always have a house because you can call your own.
Yeah.
That social contract has been broken by successive governments in Ireland by importing so many foreigners. What has happened is shadow housing lists have appeared where they have an Irish housing list, and at the same time, there's a list run alongside of it with the foreign names on it. And the foreigners have been taken off the list faster than the Irish. So this particular one we're looking at here at the moment, this is Clondalkin in Dublin, which is one of the suburbs of Dublin. And this isn't actually for rental. This is a queue to view a show house for this estate. So these houses are all for sale for 400,000 euros and above. And this is the queue of people to look at them. And the reason why you're seeing this is because the Irish government is offering assistance to foreigners to buy their first homes.
Of course. Of course they are. It's like America, you know, non-whites get down payment assistance programs. They get like, oh, here's $25,000 of down payment and we'll give you this special loan. This is equity. Yes. This is critical race theory in action, in policy. Oh, my God.
I didn't know. And this place is, every Irish person is in competition with these people. Every single Irish person. So we had the children's minister that spoke about, Roger O'Gorman, last year himself and Helen McEntee, our Minister for Justice, last year or the year before, they tweeted from their Twitter accounts in 12 different languages, come to Ireland. You will be given your own door accommodation within 4 months of arrival. So they tweeted this out in Arabic, whatever African languages, all 12 different languages, Lana. Come to Ireland, you will get assistance and you will be given your own door accommodation within 4 months. And what we've seen since then is everybody has flooded to
Well,
Ireland.
So that's no why kidding. Yeah. Of course.
Our system are, yeah, come for free stuff. Like, in one sense, you don't blame these people. You know, if you offer a dog something, he's
I
going to take
don't,
it.
but then I
But
do because of their behavior once I get there.
yeah, well, I still blame them. I always blame them. They're the symptom. You know, if you ignore the symptom, you're not going to treat it. Like, you have to treat the cause and the symptom.
Yeah,
So,
both.
but yeah, their behavior is intolerable. But yeah, so what we have is, at the moment then, is a situation where we have people coming from, the majority of them are coming from Africa. Then we have Georgia and Albania, which rank very high at the moment. So Georgia is the number one country for asylum applications. Then I believe it's Nigeria, Algeria, Zimbabwe, Somalia. So mostly the African countries, Georgians, Albanians, and then we even have Americans on the list, funnily enough. There's 33 Americans down at the bottom there. See if claiming
If they
asylum in
want
America, claim
people,
asylum in Ireland.
I know so many good Irish people, like Irish, who would love to come back
Yeah.
home. Why not bring those Irish American people back home? They never do. They never open the
Yeah,
door back to
they never
them
do.
if they supposedly need
They never
workers and
do.
people to take care of the old. That would solve all your problems, right?
Yeah, and that's when you start asking those questions, and when you get down to it, that's when you start to realize that the only motivations for this are nefarious motives, because they don't want to bring people in to help replenish the pension system. They don't want a young population who's reproducing at a healthy birth rate. They want to wipe Irish people off the map and replace them with brown people. That's what's happening, because there's no logical explanation for
No.
replacing Irish natives with people from Georgia, Somalia, Zimbabwe. There's no logic to it. And
No.
this is the big thing in Ireland at the moment, is getting people to that point where they can make that judgment, where they can see that most Irish people are so far away from joining those dots that that's the big issue. Like, we had a poll about 6 months ago from Red Sea, say that 75% are sick of this. So 75% want no more refugees, we're done with it.
That's
But
right.
those people, they won't be voting no more refugees because of demographics or because of dropping birth rates or anything like that. They'll be doing it because of housing or resources. And this goes back to the whole Ireland is full thing that I started, because I figured out that you can't get through to the majority of Irish people about things like race. It's because we weren't raised to think that way.
Yeah, because you
If
grew
you
up, you
start
were all
talking to an
white when
Irish
you
adult
grew
about,
up. That's why, because you all grow up and you're all
exactly.
white. You don't even have to think about race. It's like me. I grew up in, white Bend, Oregon, and it was like we never had to
Yeah.
talk about it because we were white and everything was good and we got along. But now comes the rude awakening,
Yeah.
right?
Exactly. And it's so hard to even start a conversation based on race with a population that are just not used to hearing about it, you know? So we have to go different ways with it, with the financial or the healthcare stuff. I'll give you an example. My brother got his two, now I got no vaccines. I saw what was happening a mile away, but my
Good.
brother got two Pfizer shots. And after the second one, he had heart failure. So within 24 hours, he had heart failure. So he ended up spending 6 months in hospital in Dublin. He was in hospital for Christmas 2021. Once he got out, he made a full recovery. Now, he's like me, he's very fit. So he does triathlons and stuff like that. And the doctors told him, you'll never be normal again. But he overcame it. He worked hard enough. He has that Irish, I don't give a feck, I want to beat the doctors. You know what I mean? I can do anything I want. It's very Irish trait. We don't base a lot of what we do in reality. Someone tells us we can't do something, we go, well, I'll show you pecker. So he got better. He got back to full fitness, and then he developed cancer in his throat. So in the space of 12 months, he went from having heart failure to throat cancer. Now, while he was awaiting the operation to remove the cancer from his throat, they scheduled the surgery a number of times and then canceled it a number of times. And while this was happening, the Irish media or the Irish government were boasting about the fact that they were flying in injured Ukrainian soldiers and treating them in Irish hospitals, while Irish people like my brother were told your cancer can stay inside you, and you can just be happy there and wait while we operate on these foreigners. So there's a fine example of again how bad things are and how low the Irish rank on the actual pecking order in our own country.
It's just disgusting. Yeah, I mean, what conclusion can you come to other than they hate you and they want you gone and they've chosen that these people are better than you and they want them to be the new Irish people, right? And but what has changed since mass immigration? Crime's gone up, sexual assaults, rape, right? What are you seeing happening there? I mean, because that's going to get people to, you know, Irish people to start paying attention more if they don't want to think about race. At least be thinking about all the rapes and the crime. Right, in the welfare abuses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So we've had a couple of high profile cases. You probably heard about them. Aisling Murphy, young Irish teacher, was killed while out going for a jog in the afternoon. She was killed by a Romanian man. That was a couple of years ago, and that made international headlines because of the brutal nature of it. And she was such a beautiful girl. For that to happen to a beautiful young Irish girl out running in the afternoon is attacked and murdered. And then not long afterwards, we had the Sligo killings where two homosexual men had their heads chopped off. They were decapitated. And a third had his eye cut out. And this was the guilty party in this case was, again, another foreigner. This was an Iraqi refugee, Mr. Polanyi, as far as I can recall. So we've had these high profile, gruesome, brutal crimes committed by foreigners that have gotten international attention, but very little in Ireland. So as soon as that happened in Ireland, the conversation immediately went to, well, Irish mammies need to do a better job of raising their sons. They're sexist and they're mean to women. And you know, again, it's total gaslighting and propaganda on a level of, the truth is so far from what has happened, you know, coming out of the mouth of the politicians and the media. Following on from those two high profile ones, we've seen a lot of other things like, Ireland has had its first conviction for female genital mutilation.
Great.
So parents, an Islamic family, the mother and father were sent to prison for butchering their daughter. The father got 6.5 years. I think the mother got 5.5. But this was the first conviction for female genital mutilation in Ireland. You know, we're importing new categories of crime.
Awesome.
Then we had the first human trafficking convictions as well. So African women were charged with the first human trafficking offences in Ireland. A couple of African ladies were importing other African ladies and selling them over here. And, you know, so.
Oh, like their ancestors were doing. Yes, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Keeping up the traditions, eh? The family business. Africans in particular are way overrepresented in the crime statistics. Yes. So they don't work. They're a very high portion of Irish prisoners at the moment. And We've had, since 2011, rape has increased 75% in Ireland, 75% since 2011. In the last 2 years alone, it's gone up another 13%. So we've gone from this high trust society where, you know, you leave your door open, where you don't even lock your car if you run into the shop, to a society where people get decapitated because they're gay, or women get murdered in broad daylight. I'm sure you've seen the endless amount of videos that I've been sharing of all the incidents in Ireland. It's every day over here. There's something.
Isn't it funny how they get a pass though? Like if it was some white person who, like, you know, who chopped off the heads of these gays. Oh my God, the worst homophobic hate crime ever. But then they just look the other way when it's a Islamic or non-white guy. Like they give all these other excuses for it. They just get a pass, you know, they're all hardcore feminist and pro-gay and all that, but then they turn the other cheek and say, well, we just need to teach these, you know, Muslims or Africans or whatever. We just need to teach them so they understand.
Yeah. The worst thing about that is that we had to find out from international media about the decapitations. Irish media wouldn't report on it. So Irish media reported that these two guys were murdered, but we had to find out from the British press that how gruesome the murders were, that he actually decapitated him, he removed their genitals as well. The Irish media will bury important facts like that just to protect the narrative that all foreigners are good. These two fine gentlemen here are Ukrainians. They were fighting in the middle of Dublin yesterday. But it's every day we're seeing new incidents every single day, Lana. Like I said, we've gone from a high trust society where the only crime was maybe the IRA were doing something that they shouldn't have been doing. And look, I'm not here to talk about whether the IRA were good or bad. They were obviously bad, killing civilians and stuff like that. But that it was confined to those type of incidents. Or we might have had, gangland crime. But again, it was confined to that. Like the streets weren't dangerous. You didn't have to worry about being attacked or any of this stuff on the streets. You know, it was a safe, safe country overall. Where, and that's why we had so much tourism. People flocked here because they felt safe when they came here. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing the complete opposite happen now. We have a country now where you might have seen recently the American chap was attacked on the streets of Dublin and beaten up. Now, he was beaten up by Irish lads, but this is, again, this is a symptom of what's happening in this country. They locked down a generation of Irish people for two and a half years of COVID. They told them that they were evil, get this booster. And now these Irish young lads are growing up in a country where they can see they have no future. And it inevitably creates a demographic, a portion of society where these people are not thinking about tomorrow. These people are thinking, how can I chase a high today? I'll go out and beat someone up, or I'll go out and steal something. And it's really horrible to see it, because it's totally unnecessary. There's no generational thinking going on in Ireland. There's no one thinking, how can we create a future for these children? They're not asking the question, why are these children acting out so much? Why are these children violent? What's the problem here? Instead, they'll talk about how bad the Irish kids are, but foreigners can murder people in the street and it'll be covered up. It'll be called. A common thing that's happened over here recently is if a foreigner commits a crime and the foreigner lives in Dublin, the media will describe it as Dublin man.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same story everywhere in every liberal, progressive, globo homo, lefty, white country right now, or formerly white country. It's the same story. We can always look back and see the trajectory and see how every country is just being ruined. And that's what they want for every single white country, because they hate us. They want us gone. What do you think it drives their hatred for, like, Irish people or any ethnically European people? I mean, have you thought about that? Like the big goal, the big purpose of warring against Europe? Because they'll try and get every single country. You know, Eastern Europe is just probably 20 years behind, but eventually that propaganda will go there too.
Yeah, well, look, I consider myself clued in on most of what's happening with this situation. And, you know, there's obviously certain questions about a particular group of people who have a desire to diversify all of Europe for whatever reason. It's like I said before, there's no logical explanation for what our leaders are doing. The only explanation for Irish people to be enacting these policies and to be pushing this type of politics on a country, altering its demographics and its culture so quickly, the only conclusion I can come to is that these people are evil. And that's after years of research. And, you know, what other conclusion do you draw when your own leaders are aiding and abetting the destruction of your country and putting foreigners ahead of you? There might be financial incentives. There might be, you'll get a place on Mars when we all go to Mars in 100 years. The bottom line is that these people are evil. If you are doing this to your own country, you're an evil person. It's as simple as that, as far as I'm concerned. It might be a different belief system. It might be whatever it is. The bottom line is you're evil if you're doing this to your own country.
100%. Now, I wanted to talk about Northern Ireland as well. Do you ever see, I mean, Irish people should come together to stop this mass invasion, right? Put aside all the fighting with each other. What do you think about that? I know North Ireland, I hear, is more homogenous, and globalists are talking about wanting you guys to unite to possibly join the EU, which is horrible. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so as you mentioned there, the North is a lot more homogenous. Now, they do have their problems, obviously, with the Catholics and the Protestants. That's still going on, that issue. It hasn't gone away. It's very much still at the forefront today. But if you take a look at where Ireland is now compared to where it was, say, even just 5 years ago, the North don't understand what they're asking for if they want to unite with the South. Like, this whole the whole idea is they're pushing this idea of a united Ireland will move forward united, but the idea is we're going to be united under the European Union. So it's not really united Ireland.
No.
Now, a lot of the reason that what's happening in the South is happening, and it's gotten to this point, I feel, is because of Sinn Féin in particular, their voter base has been, they've been brainwashed into thinking that Ireland doesn't belong to the Irish. So Sinn Féin would, you know, Sinn Féin, the Irish, translates directly to us ourselves, we ourselves. So the name of their party means put Irish people first, basically. But back in the 70s and 80s, they were infested by Marxists. British intelligence put a lot of Marxists into that party to try and basically take it away from the whole Ireland belongs to the Irish thing. And we had Martin McGuinness and Gerry Adams who were led the party down a road it shouldn't have gone down. And they started becoming interested in global issues and Palestine. And like a Sinn Féin voter now in Ireland would agree with the statement Palestine belongs to the Palestinians ahead of the statement Ireland belongs to the Irish.
Yes.
So one of my biggest enemies, largest enemies, would be Sinn Féin at the moment, a party who traditionally, and if you ask people outside of Ireland, would be for Ireland. You know, they're the definition of Ireland belongs to the Irish would be Sinn Féin and that old Republican history. But I'm facing these people, like, these are my enemies. I've been targeted by the IRA 4 or 5 years ago. They went after my mother's house. They didn't come after my house. They went after my mother's house. But this is a big problem. I would love to be able to get on board with the Shinners and say, right, let's put all our other policy differences aside. Let's, you know, we can talk about gay marriage tomorrow. We can talk about abortion the next day. We can talk about finances the day after that. Let's find a baseline here. And the baseline is you agree Ireland belongs to the Irish. I agree Ireland belongs to the Irish. But we can't have that conversation, because despite the fact that the Shinners wake up every morning and say, Britain, get out of Ireland, it's Brits out, everybody else in.
Yeah.
So they will call me a far right fascist because I don't want brown people coming here, but they don't want Brits coming here, and that makes them virtuous. So they're continuing the tradition of republicanism in their eyes. They're fighting this, you know, they're playing, it's a fucking video game, if you ask me. They're playing a role. They're fighting the colonialists of 100 years ago, but they're not worried about the colonization that's happening now. So
yeah.
Last year alone, more foreigners entered Ireland than the entire plantation of Ulster. The entire plantation of Ulster, more foreigners entered in 1 year. But we can't get on board with these people, or they can't get on board with us. Like, they're our natural ally, if you were to ask me, is Sinn Féin voters. They're our natural ally. These people have went to war for the belief that Ireland belongs to the Irish. But in 2023, you're more likely to see these people holding the BLM sign or protect trans children sign than you are to see them standing there with a sign saying Ireland belongs to the Irish.
Well, then they're going to learn a hard lesson, a hard, long lesson, you know. And this is, it's another reason too, when we were talking about religion earlier, that I like to think in terms of, when we all should think in terms of folk first, not religion or anything else. Like, your people is your tribe. That is your number one church that you should be concerned about. Everything else, like, yeah, you can worry about later. Now, last question for you. I wanted to ask, to talk a little bit about protests. What do you think? How can we change? How can Irish people change this? How do they go against it? Also, any political parties discussing repatriation? What are your thoughts moving forward? I know we talked about earlier, like, this is a long game. Long game.
It's a very long game. It's a very long game. I think we're in a good spot at the moment. So the protest movement has been going on since about November of last year. It started off with East Wall in Dublin, in an inner city community. It was started by women, and it's spread. It's gone all over the country. So now we're at the stage now, Lana, where there will be protests happening in Ireland today that I don't even know about. And to me, I think that's a real sign of success, that this thing has gotten so big that there's events happening that, like, someone like me, who I consider myself central in this whole far right thing, there's things happening that even I don't know about. So it's growing exponentially at the moment. So with protests popping up all over the country organically, I believe the protest movement is the tip of the spear for the 75% of Irish people who said they don't want any refugees here. I think the majority of Irish people are too afraid to come out and be labelled racist because they have a cushy job at a multinational. You know, a lot of Irish people are employed in multinational companies. It makes up a massive segment of our economy. And they're beyond good jobs that they don't want to lose. So they're not going to go out and say, get Muhammad out of my country. Mm. So it falls on people like me, and the Dublin protest movement and everyone else to keep this going. So it's, there's a nice bit of momentum with it at the moment. They try to stop it. They try to label it as violent, but there's been over 370 protests now since November, and not one incident of violence.
Yes.
Not one single incident of violence. So it's a real peaceful movement. It's at the forefront of this movement are family women, Lana. Mothers, young mothers, single mothers, mothers who are worried about bringing daughters up in a country where unvetted foreign men are running around. So I'm very positive about the protest movement at the moment. The language as well, the culture in Ireland is changing. We're seeing mainstream media start to parrot things that I say, basically. You know, so if I was saying a year ago, there's too many foreigners in this country, we're starting to see things like that creep into mainstream media in Ireland, which is, it's heartening, you know, because for so long of having the bombardment the other way, to see someone echo your viewpoint and know that the Overton window is now shifting to where we can start having these discussions.
Yes.
This Red Sea poll perfectly demonstrates
that's where it begins,
that.
Information and discussion. Yes.
Yes. I found this one very interesting because it says people were questioned on refugees. So this shows that Irish people are not only done with asylum seekers, we're done with refugees as well. Like, we don't care about Ukrainians fleeing war anymore. Get them the fuck back to wherever they came from. Mm. And this breaks across party lines as well, Lana. So every party is on board here. Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, the establishment parties, and then Sinn Féin, the Marxist pretend Irish party. Even their voters are agreeing with the sentiment that Ireland belongs to the Irish, and we have too many foreigners coming in here, too many refugees at the moment. So the protests will continue. There's a couple of things coming up. We have a free speech event in the RDS in Dublin in a couple of weeks where Michael Schellenberger is coming over. We didn't discuss the hate speech laws, but that's another thing that's they're trying to do at the
they're
moment.
Trying. They're trying. Are they, do you think they're going to gain traction? They're going to gain traction? Are they going to push us through?
We've stopped this twice, Lana. They tried this in 2018. The first time they tried this, they used a gentleman by the name of Brandon Ari. He's an African man who was he moved to Ireland and became an athlete.
Oh, yeah.
They used him as the face. Yeah.
That's right. Remember. That guy.
They
yes.
used him as the face of this campaign. I went into his Twitter account and dug up every
yes.
negative, racist, whatever tweet that he's ever posted. Now, this fella had been talking about some crazy stuff. So we pushed all this out into the media, and then the hate speech laws disappear. The second time they tried to bring him in this year, the plan, Lana, was for them to have these hate speech laws passed in July. So when they went on their break for the summer, the plan was that the hate speech bill was going to be law by then. We've stopped it at this point. It's still in the Shannon, which is the Senate. It technically can't be cancelled. So there's a weird process. It would have to go back to the Dáil. So it'd have to go back to the equivalent of Congress, and they would have to either change it or get rid of it. But it's in a strange place at the moment. So it's been held up by the senators. The senators have basically said no. And since they have said no, we've seen TDs, which is the equivalent of a congressman, TDs have come out en masse and started to reject it.
Oh, good.
So we've really changed the conversation in the country, whereas 3 months ago, the whole thing was, we need hate speech laws. Ireland's so fucking racist. Everyone needs to be put in jail for their words. Yeah. And now we're in a place where we're remembering that we were all brought up and we were told sticks and stones will break your bones, but names can never hurt you.
That's right.
So
we used to say that as kids too. I remember hearing that on the
yes,
playground.
Exactly.
What the hell?
Yeah.
God.
Common sense.
Now it's
common
like.
Common sense, Lana. Common sense. Words can't hurt you. And this is it. If we stick to that, we stick to our traditions and stick to what we know to be true, I think we'll be okay.
Yeah.
But political parties, the Irish Freedom Party are probably our best hope at the moment. No, they've no elected representatives. This is the issue. So in Ireland, everybody in power is singing off the same hymn sheet. So the opposition and the establishment parties agree on everything. It's not like America where we have left and right. In Ireland, we have left and far left, as you see there,
oh,
Mr. Gerry Adams.
Yes.
Like, this is Gerry Adams, IRA man, Sinn Féin, and he's standing there with George Floyd and Black Lives Matter. This is what you're up against, Lana.
Yes.
Like this is what you're up against, standing up for trans youth.
Oh, God. Yeah, I know. They were disappointed by that poll, too, right? They were disappointed in their voters that they didn't want to take in more refugees. That's what I read, anyway. Yeah.
They were. They were calling their own voters racist. They protested a Catholic church last year, Sinn Féin did. Sinn Féin, whose sole purpose was to fight for Catholics, protested a Catholic church.
For not flying the gay flag.
A gay pride flag. The gay pride flag. Yeah, so the Irish Freedom Party, and then down in Cork, we have Ireland First, which is a new party. Look, I personally don't believe that politics is the way out of this. I don't believe that we're going to change this at the ballot box. I don't believe that we're going to change this through elected representation. I think there needs to be a massive cultural shift on this island and get back to a place where we're comfortable saying that Ireland belongs to the Irish, that this is our island. It's not anyone else's island. And Irish people come first on this island, not anyone else.
Yeah.
That our ancestors fought, bled, and died for their freedom, for our freedom. And for us to give it away to foreigners is not only insulting to the sacrifice these men made, but it's downright fucking disrespectful to their legacy as well, you know? So, look, I'm positive. I'm always positive.
I don't take black pills.
Irish people don't take black pills at all, Anna. We're constant white pillars. Even when we're being wiped out, we're still smiling.
Riding on that horse, taking that last breath. Yes. Yes, I know. Exactly. Braveheart.
At least we had a bit of crack while we were going. Yeah.
No, I believe in the long run, truth is going to prevail, and eventually, you know, Irish people, Swedish people, all the other European ethnicities will do some creative things in the future to wiggle out of this situation that we've gotten into, and then we'll be ready to start looking at who did it after we get out a lot of these people and get them to go back home.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
The only constant is change, and any of these totalitarians that are destroying our countries at the moment should read a history book, because nobody holds on to power forever.
Nope.
And usually they lose it in quite dramatic fashion.
Yeah.
So look, history is on our side. We'll look forward positively, and we'll be hopeful about what's to come.
Exactly. Thank you, Michael, so much for the crash course.
Thank you, Lana. I appreciate
into Ireland.
It.
Yes. Okay. We'll have to have you back sometime in
appreciate
the future.
Appreciate you having me on.
Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anytime, girl. Thank you.
Gotta love the Irish. Thank you for watching. You can always find all our content at redice.tv. We aren't on the dark corners of the internet. Share this show. Action begins with discussion. And I am confident that our discussions are going to lead to the right course of action. And of course, a special thanks to our executive producers, T. Lothrop Stoddard, V. Miller, Resin Revolt, Good Luck Lap, Jake, Red Pill Rundown, French 47, Mark Smith, No One Jeeves, President Obunga, Mongoose, William Fox, Angry White Soccer Mom, The Second Wanderer, Operation Werewolf, The Ride Never Ends, Francis Parker Yoki, and Dilbob, Last Place Simp, Joseph Hart, Purple Haze. And to our producers, Mr. Walker 696, Johansson, Leroy DeMond, Snark Pup, Eyes Open, Mr. Lemry, Yuri New, Obadiah Hakeswill, Perfect Brute, Single Action Army, and Commie Combo Deal. And of course, if you want to support us, head over to redeyesmembers.com and sign up for a membership. You can also become an executive producer, which helps us. We are 100% supported by you. Love you guys. See you on the next one.